Hello. A snatch of birdsong to launch the new series. Finches, but not any old finches. Already with an honoured place in our understanding of evolution, these birds have now yielded yet more insights. We'll also be cueing a hurricane.
Line clear. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Well, not a real hurricane, of course, but a simulation of one of its effects. Pretty unnerving, all the same. Before that, I'll be finding out why you need a Hollywood stuntman to capture a pinch of interstellar dust, and to begin, how a letter might be more efficient than a radio message when contacting our neighbours, if any, in distant stars. As you may have heard on the news today, the Arecibo radio telescope in Puerto Rico has picked up some signals unlike those normally recorded from astronomical objects. One explanation, naturally, is that they are messages from another world. It's generally assumed that if we do ever make contact with extraterrestrial beings, it will indeed be through radio waves. But Chris Rose, Professor of Electrical and Computer Engineering at Rutgers University in New Jersey, isn't so sure. In this week's issue of Nature, he makes the surprising suggestion that if we want to initiate contact, some equivalent of a message in a bottle might be more effective. In practice, of course, it would have to be messages, plural, millions of them. At least one directed to each star, with the hope that it might park itself in orbit until someone found it. To be frank, we're dealing here with long odds. Anyway, what is the drawback that Chris Rose sees in using radio waves?
Radio waves have severe limitations because they disperse over distance, so the signal strength gets lower and lower and lower the farther and farther you go away. And since the signal strength is related to how well you can detect a signal and how many pieces of information you can get across, that is a limitation. So what we came up with was the notion of writing things down in some material and sending it physically to the destination, which seems terribly wasteful.
That is an astounding difference, isn't it? Because you tend to assume that the energy required to beam out some radio waves is so little by comparison with the energy required to send a physical object out into space. You tend to think that, well, it must be much more efficient to use radio waves. But, I mean, your calculations suggest not, then.
Yes, exactly. That's why we wrote the paper, because the numbers really surprised us. It's not factors of one or two, but very, very, very large factors. Here's the analogy. Imagine the amount of energy that it takes to lift a 5-pound sack of sugar, I guess a 2-kilo for you, pack of sugar, from a countertop into a cabinet. And that's, well, it will equate that with the amount of energy it takes to get a written message from Earth to 10,000 light years away. The corresponding amount of energy it would take to deliver the same message to a point 10,000 light years away is about a 2-megaton nuclear blast. So these are not small numbers. There is one other important point. You have to be willing to tolerate delay. Obviously, if you take a piece of matter, everybody knows Einstein's E equals MC squared, and also that you can't get up to the speed of light. But if you try to accelerate a piece of matter close to the light speed, you end up having to put in inordinate amounts of energy. So if you can tolerate delay, it's much better to send it. I guess the one maybe semi-cute analogy is you could imagine it's better to post it in the U.S., the 37-cent stamp, rather than make the phone call.
Physically, what is it you would actually imagine sending to communicate with far distant places? I mean, would it be writing on paper, a tape, a CD, or what?
Any and all of the above. So, for example, you could literally imagine sticking things into a laser printer and coding it as individual dots on the paper. DVDs are also a possibility. The Voyager spacecraft actually has a recording, an analog audio recording, engraved into a gold disc. That's another way of doing it. You could put a bunch of information on your computer disc, put that in a box, send it, and you could keep on going on and on and on and on and up to densities where you're actually sending biological material like RNA or DNA, suitably desiccated and preserved, sticking that in a box and sending it. And the packaging is important.
But the practicalities still reflect the fact that if you don't actually know where this extraterrestrial civilization is you're trying to contact, then you have either to just take a blind guess and send one package out and hope it gets there, or alternative, you say, identify most likely places are going to be stars and send one package to every star. You could end up with an awful lot of packages of information, couldn't you?
That is really a great question. So let's just do the comparison, and let's try to figure out where the break-even point is, where radiation becomes more efficient than matter transmission. So the notion is this. The further out you go, the more stars there are. So the more packages you're going to have to send. That distance where you have to send out so many packages that it completely negates the advantage that you had sending packages in the first place is about 10 times larger than the visible universe. So you can send a lot of packages. When you have that sort of scale, lifting the sugar bag versus a 2-megaton blast, you have a lot of slop room in the number of packets that you can send out and advertise your message.
Chris Rose on interstellar communication, not for those who can't bear to be kept waiting for an answer. Gabriel Walker, consultant to New Scientist magazine, is with me in the studio. While we're on the topic of sort of long shots, Gabriel, can I just refer you back to that point I made earlier on? The new findings from the Arecibo radio telescope we heard about today, what do you reckon the chances are that they really are something from another civilization?
Well, I'm sad to say the chances are it's a very long shot. But on the other hand, it's quite exciting. And one of the nice things about it is it's come from this SETI at home program where the telescope collects vast amounts of data and then it's processed by everyone's computers when they're just idling. And so this is a kind of triumph for the little people with their computers. But they've seen it three times. It looks a bit odd. It's not like anything we know. It comes from a strange part of space. It doesn't seem to have any particular object broadcasting it. It might be.
Well, we can always keep our fingers crossed, can't we? Hope against hope. Going back to what Chris Rose in New Jersey was saying, their alternatives of sending out, instead of radio waves, actually sending out physical objects, he was quite sold on the idea, he made a passing mention of it there, about sending out genetic material, DNA, as a possible message substance. I mean, how does that grab you?
Well, I think it's a bit more likely to do that than to send something like a DVD.
Yes.
Because, I mean, if you think about it, how are we going to communicate with an alien species? We don't even know what kind of language they have. How can we communicate? But there's one thing that we are likely to have in common with alien life, and that's something like DNA, some molecule that replicates. And if you think about the sort of thing you want to send out, it has to be something that can survive unknown, unexpected catastrophes, that can replicate itself, that you can send out in vast numbers. So just supposing an alien civilization sent out little viruses with very specifically targeted messages that might even now be in all of our cells. We could all be walking around with alien messages. How spooky is that?
It's also a rather appealing idea that we start shooting out bucket loads of our own DNA into space, isn't it?
That's one way to do it.
Indeed. Next Wednesday.